Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, March the 14th, 73rd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, College of the Redwoods President Kathy Smith. How you been?
I've been great. Thank you.
Good. You drink color codes to your wardrobe. That is very impressive.
That's good. I've given up soda.
Oh, really? Is that your Lent thing
or just in general?
Oh, in forever general. And ever.
That's what I'm trying. Yeah.
Were you one of the diet girls?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that stuff really wasn't soda anyway, was it?
It tasted all right. Oh.
This afternoon, we got a couple of different things to talk about. Obviously, accreditation is well underway since last we talked.
Yes.
Get an update on that. And also the news earlier this week that there's some continued cuts going on out at CR. We'll talk about some of the whys and wherefores on that as well when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Kathy Smith, president of College of the Redwoods. But before we do, our quote this day. Huh. That's an interesting one. Edmund Burke. Quote, toleration is good for all, or it's good for none. I suppose that's right up there with one size fits all. So where do you want to begin?
Well, I always like to start with good news.
All right. Let's talk about the status then with the accreditation process, what was said when the troops came to town, and what the current status is.
Well, we did have a visiting team come in November of 2012 and write a report up. And then I went to a commission meeting in January.
I think that's when we last connected was you were anticipating going to it.
Very good. So I went with our board chair and with our special trustee, and the three of us went representing the college and answered questions that they had for us. And the result of that was that in February 12th or so, we did receive a letter that took us off of show cause sanction. And show cause is the lowest level or highest level, as however you want to look at it. It's the worst level of sanction. And they took
thinnest
us,
ice?
Yes, the thinnest ice. And part of our report that we had to file last October was a closure report. So the way, you know, what we would do if we lost our accreditation, how we would close. So the way the message came across to me was, Kathy, you can throw away your closure report because you don't need it. So
now, was there a lot of effort put into that element?
The closure report?
Yeah.
It was pretty vague. We didn't go into a lot of detail because if the college did lose accreditation, they give you some time to work through the process of closing down at least a year. So we didn't put a lot of effort into all the details.
Which is good because I would think if you're spending a lot of time doing that, that would be time away from something else.
Yes.
And in a critical situation, you got to have all the time you can put into the areas that you need to have done.
Well, and that was the dilemma we were in for the few months before the October 15th report, because we were working so hard to bring the accreditation up to snuff to get our report filed that we didn't want to take the time to write a closure report. But we were required to, and we did. And the work that we have done is fantastic work, and the commission saw that. Now, what they have said now, we were moved up a level to probation, so we're not, you know, out of the doghouse yet, but we're moved up a level. And some of the things that they've said now are two of the things in our plans that we'd been working on. They want us to continue to improve upon, and that's a professional development plan for all of our faculty and staff. The other thing is a strategic hiring plan targeting diversity hiring, and so they want us to work hard on that. And then they really focused in on financial things, and financial aspects weren't part of the report a year ago, weren't part of the commission's letter a year ago, but they are now because of the financial situation that we find ourselves in.
So let's talk briefly about the strategic or the, I guess, the diversity element of it all.
Strategic hiring plan is what they're calling it, yes.
Yeah. Now, will they say quota? Will they say effort? Do they? Because my understanding, and it's really thin, is that unless it's a real observable minority, you know, if you're black, you're black. Mm-hmm. Okay. If it's not something that's that blatant, you can't ask to find out, to get to where you need to be. So you kind of get in this quandary or this box where you need to, but you can't. How do you work through all of that to achieve whatever the end goal is, but still be legal to get there?
Yeah. Well, you ask good questions. It's optional that you report your status on many of the forms that students and others are asked to fill out. But when we look at the plan for hiring, we're measuring against our effort. How do we advertise? So if we just put an ad in the local paper, that's one thing. But if we reach out and get to some Spanish-speaking papers and to some, you know, the Native American community, and we get to different communities and different outlets, then the effort's there. I will say that one of the things that held us back on showing improvement in those areas is that because of the budget, we haven't been hiring anybody lately. So we can't show a change.
So it really doesn't, yeah.
So as we start improving and getting the opportunity to hire people, then we can show that we're following our plan.
That is a bit of a box also. You know, if you're in a reduction mode rather than an expansion mode, it's tough. And I would like to think that you wouldn't be retaining people based on those things, but you'd be keeping them based on competencies.
Well, we have eliminated 39 positions, but they're based upon the positions, not on the people who occupy the positions, and trying to figure out what are the highest priority tasks that the college needs done and keeping those folks who perform those tasks.
Was there any significant change on what's the primary function of CR?
Only that we're trying to adhere more closely to the Chancellor's Office guidelines for the State of California Community Colleges, and those have been out for a couple of years, and it's taking colleges a while to get everything transformed into this mode, and it's a three-dimension. It is transfer education, classes that students need to transfer to the four-year universities, career technical education, classes that students need so that they can get a job, and then basic skills education, which are classes that students need to bring them up to college-level work and be ready to take college classes.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spare new to their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Kathy Smith from College of the Redwoods. Kathy, you had mentioned in the first segment about accreditation and that there were three elements of the probation that CR is now advanced to that have to be addressed. Spent a little bit of time talking about the hiring process. I would think the toughest thing is the financial one. Not that budget is tough now, obviously it is, but what do you know that nobody else knows that the governor is going to do to educational funding and compensations and reimbursements and grants and foundations, and yet then we put in maybe some increased earthquake safety standards, for example, or OSHA standards, or et cetera, et cetera. How can you put together a plan for the next cycle, 3-4 years, whatever it might be, and have any certainty that has any reliability to what is, or is this more procedural to get the accreditation guys to say, yeah, they're paying attention to the dollars. Next.
I wouldn't say it's just procedural, but it is a very difficult process. The budgeting process for education in California for California community colleges is something that changes frequently. We were just hit with a mid-year deficit. We don't know exactly how much it's going to be. We're estimating at this point around the $400,000 figure. Last year we got a mid-year deficit of $500,000+. And some years you can expect a deficit.
And that was probably wrapped in saying, we're 20% better than we were last year.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But this is after we have already gone 3/4 of the way through our year. We already have our classes scheduled. We already have our employees hired. And you find out 3/4 of the way through the year that you're losing $400,000 this year. And in addition, the other strange thing about community college funding is that until they do the final calculation in February of 2013, we didn't know what our budget was for 2011-12, the year that ended last June. So we don't find out our final budget for a year that ends June 30th until February of the next year. Now, luckily, this year, we found out that last year's budget was $100,000 better than we thought from the state. But some years it goes the other direction as well.
So you got a little bit of hedge against that $400,000.
A little bit. But it's quickly absorbed when you have a $27 million budget.
Well, if you got $400,000 and you just found one, so you still got a $300,000, that still isn't comfortable. So what maneuverability do you have to hit the budget numbers that you now know that you need to hit in the next 3 months?
Well, we have a problem, a structural deficit in our budget that has taken years to accumulate and get to this point. So we know that we're not going to solve it all in 1 year. We're working on it. We have had this structural deficit that's gotten bigger and bigger over the years, and we've been able to cushion ourselves from the impact because we've had reserves to cover it. Our reserves are gone. And so we're like your personal bank account. When your savings account's gone, you can't keep spending more than you're bringing in. And that's what the situation we're in right now. So we did go through a major reorg that got approved by the board last December and implemented at the end of January, which eliminated 39 positions. There were several people that retired out of that, but we actually did lay off 16 employees at that time. That'll save us about $1.6 million per year. So that helps. Temporary help that we have, and I really appreciate the cooperation of all the faculty and staff at the college. Temporary help is that everybody right now is taking 2 days a month furlough. So that's equivalent to about a 9% reduction in our salaries. And
furlough is a non-compensated?
Non-compensated day. So luckily, we can choose which days at this point. So our paychecks have been reduced by 9%, and we get 2 days off unpaid per month. That is a temporary stopgap measure while we try to figure out how we can solve it long term.
So as you're looking at, and you said a structural deficit, is it enrollment-based, not being at cap enrollment or capacity, or is it costs? Is it the compensation from the state being less than what it was? Combinations? How do you get there?
It's a combination. And, you know, as we all know, we can, to fix our budget problems, we can either reduce our expenses or increase our revenues or a little bit of both.
I went to that class too.
Good, good. And so we're trying to do all of that. But you ask one about the revenue from the state. First off, the state revenue has decreased by about 13% over the last 3 or 4 years.
Per kid, per unit?
Per okay. FTES, full-time equivalent student. So so the amount has decreased, but also our enrollment has decreased. And we look at that. We were serving about 5 years ago, we were serving about 500 students more than we were getting paid for. So we don't want to serve more. We don't want to serve less. We want to get the maximum amount and serve the number of students that we're funded for.
So you've got a sweet spot that you're trying to hit.
That is exactly right. And we need about 100 more this year to hit that sweet spot for this year. We've tried to analyze, and we're still working on, why have our enrollments dropped? And, you know, there's multiple factors when we look at that. You know, one, of course, you know, has to do with the economics and demographics in all of the communities we serve. We also, apparently last year, I shouldn't say apparently, last year, before I came, decisions were made to close down some of our centers, our sites, McKinleyville, Arcata, downtown. So there are some people who took classes there that aren't willing to drive out to the campus.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Kathy Smith.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Kathy Smith. Kathy, considering all the different things that are out there, you got the budget challenges, you've got the accreditation, good, but not where you want to be. How tempting is it to take the eye off the prize of education? Can they both be done at the same time with maximum efficiencies?
Well, of course they can both be done at the same time. It's the with maximum efficiencies that I'm not sure I can agree with. I would say that that is a dilemma that we've all been dealing with in education for some time, as far as all of the requirements that are placed on us by accreditation and regulations take us away from some of the things that we would like to spend time on regarding improving our educational processes and our classroom instruction, et cetera. But I think it's all integrated, because I think as we try to improve our success and retention rates so that we can get students out into the workforce or transfer, I think a lot of the things that accreditation is trying to push for us are best practices. What are other colleges doing that help their students be more successful? So they're asking us to do those same things.
But if you can't afford to play, is there recognition, is there latitude to say, well, this is what we would like to do, this is what we can afford to do? Do they recognize that as a reality check? Or does this tend to be more philosophical and, well, you just got to figure out how to do that?
The latter. And, you know, this happened a few years ago when one of the accreditation pushes was, and it's of course still important in accreditation, is that we base our decisions upon data and evidence-based decision-making. And so a lot of the colleges a few years back did not have institutional researchers. And the accrediting commission said, you've got to have an institutional researcher. Whether you had money or not, you had to find an institutional research person to help provide that data so you can make decisions based upon data. So we have the accreditation standards that we must adhere to, and there is a 2-year rule, and this is a federal rule from the Department of Education, that says that if you don't adhere to a standard and you're given the warning that you must adhere to it, you have 2 years to fix it. Whether you have the budget or not does not come into the discussion at all. You have to fix what's wrong with the standard.
And the level of sophistication on this has to be to the nines? Or can you, let's say this institutional research position, for example, you have a class or you have a member of staff who goes out and will periodically survey with intercept studies 5% of the campus, 5% of the administration, and 150 community members. Can it be that simple, or does it have to really be a highfalutin, highly technical, full-on marketing survey or research?
Well, somewhere in the middle. I mean, as long as you can get the information and document that you are basing your decisions on which classes to offer, on which processes to use, if you're basing your decision on information that shows that students are more successful if you do this, then, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a highfalutin technical
survey. So you do research on post-CR mm-hmm. rather than with the current body.
Or
also.
Even just post-class.
Yeah. You know,
because we have a lot of data that is centered around how many students are successful in each class. So, and that's just an example. I mean, there are a lot of accreditation requirements that we must adhere to, and it's not really relevant whether we have the budget or not.
So if we call that regulatory costs, mm-hmm. how much of your budget mm-hmm. is regulation, adhering to regulation, adhering to these types of things? I heard something a number of months ago now. It said the average business in America spends over $120,000 a year in compliance to government standards, reports, things of that nature. I would imagine you guys are up through the roof on that one.
Probably, but it's not something we calculate. I mean, that would be interesting to calculate, but it's not something that we've paid a lot of attention to because it's something we just have to do. And I would say some of it is not necessarily additional expense, but it's additional time that faculty and staff must spend.
Same thing.
Except that we then don't pay extra for them to do that, spend that extra time.
But you're losing that utilization or that time somewhere else.
We give
up
doing something else.
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct.
So when you were going into the current cycle of determining what classes to keep, what classes not to keep, or what staff positions to keep or not to keep, you lose the art of education and you have to go to research and base everything purely on black and white and numbers rather than using your intuition, your experience, hands-on knowledge to know what direction you would take it. You'd have to fall back on these empirical studies?
Well, you do both. You do both. I mean, definitely when we're determining which classes to offer and which classes not to offer and which positions to take, we do look at the data. And the classes that we are planning to offer next year are based upon data where we looked at the numbers that we can get in the class, the number of people we have on the wait list, how quickly the class fills up, whether the class has success rates that are high, all of those things. And at this point, it's a matter of, because we're also in the financial situation, we're trying to solve the finance problem by trying to get as many people in a class as we can. So if you're going strictly by the numbers gain, you would say offer that class that 50 people want and don't offer the class that 15 people want. But then you also have to take into some consideration what the chancellor's office requirements are. If that class with 50 people is a class that doesn't necessarily meet the career or transfer or basic skills class, then you have to weigh that. Should we offer that just so we can get the additional students, or should we spend our money on a class that's really needed for those students to graduate?
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Kathy Smith.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Kathy Smith from CR. So, Kathy, with some of the different challenges, the budget's there, the priority's there, you don't have as many classes, you don't have as much staff, how did you make the determination what classes made sense, which ones didn't? Did you go back to the chancellor's dictates and use that as the primary reference?
We did, and we also looked at the data that we accumulated as far as number of students. And so we found that we have, and I call them bottlenecks, we have some areas where students who are trying to graduate bottleneck because they can't get the courses they need. And most of those are the core courses, the English, the speech classes, the math classes, science, biology, some of those. And so we need to spend our resources on offering more sections of those classes so that the students can get through that bottleneck so they can get out quicker and onto their job or their transfer institution. So we looked at
those.
Does
that make the decisions cleaner, easier to make?
Well, not necessarily easy, because all of the classes that we have offered and offer to the community are ones that community members want and need and love, and we don't like to not offer any of them, but it's limited resources, and you know, it's just like personal income. If you've got, you know, a certain amount of money, you have to spend it on one thing or the other, and we had to make choices, and they weren't easy choices to make. I will say that part because of the financial situation we're in, that if we can offer more classes where we know the demand is high and get more students, then we'll get more revenue. And we're after the more revenue so that we can offer the other classes.
So there is a symbiotic relationship.
Absolutely. There is also a chance that some of the classes that we've offered for credit, we can offer for non-credit through community education. Not every class would be offered that way, but some of the ones that don't meet the chancellor's highest priority areas can be offered in community ed, and students can still take them. It's just in a different format.
And those would be kind of like the fun classes?
Yeah, well, the electives, fun classes.
A lot of the
electives
types.
And some that, you know, some that can be used for transfer as well, and we hope to have a system in place where if a student wants it for transfer, they can take it for transfer, but if they don't need it to transfer, they're just taking it for lifelong learning or for self-development, then we won't put them through the four-credit process.
Somehow this stuff's starting to make sense. That's kind of frightening for me.
Well, that is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. if folks want to know a little bit more, can they find this stuff on the website? Is there anywhere that they can go to try to just gather more info?
Well, we're working right now on finalizing our summer and fall schedules. Our summer classes, we've expanded. We're going to offer more summer classes, so that will be up on the web in maybe 2 weeks.
Good deal. Thanks for coming by. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Kathy Smith. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.